Welcome to KGN News Morning Magazine. It's September 12th of 2022. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. Thank you for joining us on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, an award-winning journalist and CU Boulder alum will speak at campus this evening about her groundbreaking research linking the accumulated effects of racism to poor health outcomes. And RTD's experiment with a month of free fare for better air has come to an end. CityCast Denver examines how it went. The BBC News headlines are at the bottom of the hour, and then the Hightower Lowdown. After that, Rosanna Longobetter brings us Storytellers of Color. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Joanna Cole will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGN News' Chiara Damare.
An explosion in an apartment building on East Alameda Avenue in Aurora on Saturday morning forced every resident in the complex to evacuate. According to CBS News Colorado, all 350 residents remained displaced a day later. Aurora Fire Rescue told CBS News over 100 residents and 25 pets moved to an emergency center at Gateway High School. They are now staying in hotels. Utility services are still off, and once the services are on again, most residents may return home. Five families have lost their homes, but none experienced life-threatening injuries. The cause of the explosion remains unknown. The Boulder Police Department arrested the 17-year-old male responsible for committing a series of crimes on University Hill the weekend prior, Claire Purnell reports.
According to a press release from the City of Boulder, BPD identified the suspect Thursday as a 17-year-old male with previous charges of indecent exposure. According to officials, police arrested the minor for violating his probation on Thursday evening. On Friday, BPD charged the suspect with three felony counts of second-degree burglary, two misdemeanor counts of indecent exposure, one misdemeanor count of attempted invasion of privacy for sexual gratification, one felony count of aggravated motor vehicle theft, and one misdemeanor count of unlawful sexual contact. Detectives presume the charges don't end there and will hold the suspect without bond at a juvenile detention center until Monday. The current crimes remain open for investigation. Anyone with more information or video footage is to contact Detective Flynn at 303-441-1850. Reference case 22-87-86. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
A group of Republicans is circulating a petition to recall Senator Kevin Priola, who last month announced a decision to switch parties. Senator Priola announced that he was leaving the GOP party and would serve as a Democrat in August. He cited Republicans' insistence on election fraud, the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol, and denying the existence of climate change as his main reasons for switching affiliations. There is now a group to recall Priola before his term is supposed to end in 2025. The group has until November 8th, or the day of the general election, to collect 18,000 signatures. If they do so, a special recall election will take place. The Democratic Party currently has the House majority in Colorado and are projected to stay that way after the November elections. The Front Range Community College system has expanded its apprenticeship program thanks to a grant from the U.S. Department of Labor. FRCC is the first college in Colorado to participate in the federal program. The apprenticeship program seeks to provide on-the-job training to students in high-priority fields, including healthcare and information technology. Chris Houston, who leads Front Range Community College's apprenticeship program, says apprenticeships are a critical component of the state's workforce development strategy because they create a more direct training and hiring link between job seekers and employers. Healthcare is a priority area in the FRCC apprenticeship program due to the ongoing shortage of healthcare workers in the area and nationwide. Boulder Shelter for the Homeless announced Friday that they will take over the lease for the former Mary Sando House in South Boulder. Named after a CU Boulder librarian who donated the house in 1980, the Mary Sando House operated a 24-bed assisted living facility serving the elderly. According to the Daily Camera, the Boulder Shelter for the Homeless will continue the service for elderly women. The Larimer Fire Department announced Saturday that the fire at County Road 21 is at 100% containment and used the facility to expand its overnight homelessness services to shelter female seniors experiencing homelessness. According to the Daily Camera, the public will most likely not be involved in the shelter's decision to use the facility.
The Larimer Fire Department announced Saturday that the fire at County Road 21 is at 100% containment,
Christian Garibay reports.
According to a report by CBS News, lightning most likely started the fire on Thursday that burned over 200 acres of land. The fire department told displaced residents that they could return to their homes Friday evening. Any and all evacuation mandates and other orders made by authorities were lifted after the fire was contained, along with County Road 23 reopening to resume northbound traffic. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
Boulder's first independent police monitor, who creates policy and training, Joe Lapari, announced that he has accepted a job in California. He accepted a position as a special investigator at the Office of the Inspector General for the Los Angeles Police Department in Los Angeles, California. After becoming Boulder's first independent police monitor, he created and operated the Office of the Independent Police Monitor and the Civilian Police Oversight Panel, which now has 11 members. The city will begin the lookout for a new independent police, and in the meantime will hire a contractor from the OIR Group, an independent California-based police oversight and review firm. Today's forecast is sunny and clear with a high of 88 degrees and a low of 48 in Boulder. In Denver, there's a high of 88 and a low of 49. And in Fort Collins, a high of 89 and a low of 42. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. Award-winning journalist, author, and professor Linda Villarosa will be in town this afternoon for a speaking engagement at her alma mater, CU Boulder. Villarosa will present her latest book, Under the Skin, The Hidden Toll of Racism on American Lives and on the Health of Our Nation. The book examines how accumulated experiences with racism are negatively influencing health outcomes of Black people in the United States, especially pregnant Black women. Villarosa will speak in CU Boulder's Old Main Building at 5 p.m. this afternoon and tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Colfax location of Tattered Cover in Denver. KGNU's Michelle Simpson sat down with Linda Villarosa to discuss her latest work.
You know, I've heard from a number of community members who are planning to come out to hear you during Monday evening's event. And the community members I've heard from are primarily Black women. So what is it that you hope Black women in the audience take away from your presentation?
Well, I think that my story is a lot of people's story. And it started at Essence when I was the health editor of Essence. And I really believed that individuals were solely responsible for their health outcomes and for the health outcomes, the poor health outcomes of African Americans, which we have always had, starting with infant mortality, including maternal mortality and morbidity, which means a near death of someone, all the way to lowered life expectancy. So I thought if we as Black women individuals just do better, then the whole community will be better. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, you know, that was like 25 years ago, I have learned that that is not the only reason that we suffer from poor health outcomes. And I think the turning point for me was in 2017 when I was writing a New York Times Magazine cover story on maternal mortality, looking at why America's Black mothers and babies are in a life or death crisis. The statistic that got to me was, why is America the only country where the number of women who die or almost die in childbirth or pregnancy is going up? Mm-hmm. Why are Black women at least 3 to 4 times more likely to suffer a death or near death due to pregnancy and childbirth? And then why is a Black woman with a master's degree or more likely to die or almost die and lose her baby than a white woman with an 8th grade education? So that told me what I used to think about, oh, if individuals just do better, we'll be better, isn't right.
Right.
Else is going on.
You know, one aspect of your book, Under the Skin, that will always remain with me is your brilliant storytelling, because what you do is you couch stories, real life people, their experiences, along with the statistical disparities, the disparities in care between Black people and their white counterparts. But what you also do is you kind of really kind of pull back the curtain on this whole idea that kind of racism is present in all aspects of healthcare. I, Linda, currently have a stepson who's in med school, and I would say he's still beginning his training, his medical training, just given the length, the duration of med school. It seems like you're just always beginning because it takes such a long time. And he's already been made aware of, and this is a phrase you use in chapter two of your book, Under the Skin, the dangerous myth that Black bodies are different. And I wonder if you might be willing to share or talk about some of those myths with our listeners.
One of the myths that was the scariest for me is the idea that Black people have really high pain tolerance, that we can tolerate levels of pain unimaginable to people of other colors, especially white people. This myth is grounded in slavery, and it was used by, started by doctors and scientists, many of whom owned slaves, enslaved people, to justify enslavement and all the cruelties that went with it. But then fast forward to 2016 is the study that I like to cite, is it looked at 222 white medical students and residents and interns. And that study showed that 40% of them believed one myth, including the myth that we have extremely high pain tolerance. So why is something that was grounded in slavery still present in, you know, in the minds of some physicians now? The other one that really stuck with me was the idea that Black people have lowered lung function, in our weak lungs. And that was started to justify enslavement, to say, oh, if people are exercising by doing free labor, then they're building their bodies and building that lung function. Ridiculous as it sounds, mm-hmm. It may have originated with Thomas Jefferson, but it was really grounded in medical education and training by this Dr. Samuel Cartwright, who was a physician who invented a machine called a spirometer, which measured lung function. In that spirometer was encoded in it was the idea and the, you know, sort of the calibration that Black people have lowered lung function, something like 10 to 15% lower. Mm-hmm. The current spirometer, many of them, not every single one, but many of them still calibrate that. And I asked a doctor recently, how do you do it? How does it, how, if you have a Black patient walk in and you have to measure lung function, mm-hmm. and she said, there's a switch on the side of the machine and you switch it to the Black reading that measures lower lung function. I thought about this, like I grew up in Denver, the Mile High City. I ran track and played soccer in the Mile High City and in Boulder. I have good lungs still. I exercise. So why, when I walk into a doctor's office with my Black self, is there going to be a little switch that says I have lower lung function? That does not look at me as an individual. It looks at me as a race. And that is bad medicine.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, you are the second person in my life who has used the term weathering. My stepdaughter is in public health. That's her area. And we were chatting one day about something so completely unrelated. But anyway, she tossed that term in to the conversation. And I said, what is that? I don't know what that is. Would you mind speaking to that? Because I'm guessing I'm not the only person, perhaps, who's just come upon that particular word, and or listeners who's never come upon it. So do you mind saying something about that, Linda?
Weathering, really understanding that concept really helped me. It mm-hmm. opened the door for me because it explained why the lived experience of being a Black person or any marginalized, a person from a marginalized group would be dangerous to your body, to your actual health. And that phrase was coined by Dr. Arlene Geronimus, who's writing a book of her own. And it speaks to the idea that something about being Black is bad for your body. And it's not limited to Black people, but we've been suffering from the effects of discrimination the longest. Mm-hmm. So if something happens to you that is what we call a microaggression, it could be some, you walk into a restaurant and they put you directly into the back, or they ignore, or you're ignored. You're in an elevator and somebody clutches their purse and moves away.
Exactly. From you. And students at CU are well aware of microaggressions.
Well aware of that. Uh-huh. You walk into a room and you everyone thinks you're not that bright. Mm-hmm. All those things. Or it's a macroaggression, which means you're discriminated by the police in housing or at your job, which is, you know, really terrible. So when those things happen, your heart, your body changes, the functions of your body change, and your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure rises, and your cortisol levels, stress hormones increase, which is all good. It's like the fight or flight syndrome. However, when it happens too much, if it's triggered over and over again, it causes a kind of premature aging to the body. which is called weathering. And that weathering comes from the word, is because Dr. Geronimus is a scientist and a poet. And it speaks to the idea that when a house, it gets weathered by the storm, it knocks off the shingles, it chips the paint, it breaks the windows. In a dual way, we're still here. We're weathering this storm. It's hurting us, but we're weathering it. We're still here, just the way that house is still standing. Dr. Geronimus hasn't always been believed, but especially now when COVID happened and you saw it hitting Black people harder and at earlier ages.
And how does that, though, connect or link with what I might call, I don't even know if this is a concept, but emotional weathering?
Emotional weathering is, I mean, it's all the same. We're only, our bodies and our minds are connected. Mm-hmm. So that is all the same. It weathers your spirit the same way, you know, when terrible things happen to you, insults happen to you over and over. It weathers your mind, it weathers your soul, it weathers your heart, and it weathers your body, which are all one package. Mm-hmm. I think the other important thing to understand, and Dr. Geronimus sat me down and explained it, and she said, this isn't unique to Black people. Mm-hmm. Anybody who is treated badly over and over and has to so-called weather these effects has their bodies age prematurely, but it's just happened the longest to us, the worst to us, the more often to us, and it's more documented. So that's why it's, you know, and we understand it more. Other people may be going through it, they don't understand it. So they're like, well, that doesn't happen to me. I was like, maybe so, depending on your experience.
Linda Villarosa, we're looking forward to sharing space with you on Monday at 5:00 in the Old Main Auditorium on the CU Boulder campus. And listeners, if you're thinking about attending Monday's event, you may want to get your hands on Linda's new book, Under the Skin, The Hidden Toll of Racism on American Lives and on the Health of Our Nation. We're looking forward to having you back in Colorado.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to coming home.
That was award-winning journalist and longtime health editor Linda Villarosa speaking with Michelle Simpson, host of Black Talk. Villarosa will discuss her book, Under the Skin, The Hidden Toll of Racism on American Lives and on the Health of Our Nation, this evening at 5 p.m. in the Old Main Building on the CU campus, and tomorrow at 6 p.m. in Denver at the Colfax location of the Tattered Cover Bookstore. The Regional Transportation District, RTD, has concluded its month-long experiment with free fares during August. The no-cost ride effort was in part meant to lure drivers out of their cars and mitigate our annual late summer problems with air quality. So, how did it go? Throughout August, CityCast Denver producer Lizzie Goldsmith rode RTD's buses and light rails while speaking with riders about their experience. She sat down with CityCast Denver host Bree Davies to discuss some stories and try to answer the big question, was the free fare worth it?
How did your free fare bus riding go for August?
It was good. Similar to the light rail, where I didn't feel like there were as many people on there as I was expecting, often the buses didn't seem as crowded as I would have expected, both at like more peak and off-peak times. I actually felt like today there were more people than I would have expected for, like, you know, the beginning of September. You know, you got to pay for your fares again. So yeah, it was just a little lighter than I was expecting.
So again, this whole point of this was like the free fare for better air. And the idea was to get fewer people to drive and more folks to take the bus and light rail. Did you talk to a lot of people on the bus who maybe otherwise would have been driving?
You know, I didn't. And those are the people I was looking for. Yeah, I was like, I wonder, you know, that's the big question. Is this going to bring more RTD riders to, you know, the buses and the trains? And I talked to probably 20 to 30 people throughout the month, and the vast majority of them were people who already take the bus on a regular basis. That hadn't changed. They were happy to save some money this month.
But it wasn't maybe doing that conversion of single occupant car drivers to becoming bus riders.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know that I met anybody in that category.
Did you personally drive less?
Maybe a little bit less. I just... I feel like I need to get a bike to supplement my movement around town, honestly, because things like hop into the grocery store, hop into, you know, grab some Chipotle or something, you know, those are close enough where I don't really need the bus, but it's also like, oh, it's too far to walk, you know, if I really want to grab something. So anyways, I don't drive that much, though. My car is a very old car. And so that's part of the reason I just want to put less wear and tear on it. But my parents visited me this month. They took RTD from the airport all the way to Louisiana Pearl with detailed directions. But they had a good experience, too. So, yeah, a little bit less, though. I don't think my friends used it much.
So you talked to a couple dozen-ish people.
Couple dozen people, yeah.
Tell me about some of the people you met.
So I met a couple women who both have been riding the bus for years on separate rides. One by choice, one lost her license, but both of them said they wouldn't go back. They love it. They supplement with bikes. You know, one said, you know, like, you can use a Zip car when you don't, you know, when you need a car. Sounds like they both live pretty close to, you know, where the bus lines work for them pretty well. One's like a gardener, and she like delivers plants all over town. So she was like carrying this plant
on the bus. That's amazing.
Yeah, and so it was fun talking to her. Both of them were really positive about RTD; thought they were doing a great job. I met a sight impaired man who lives in Boulder, who's lived here for 3 months, so he couldn't really speak to what it was before, you know, kind of what it seems different, but he really likes it. He relies on public transportation to get around. He thinks RTD holds up pretty well compared to other cities he's lived in. I talked to an unhoused person who's really grateful to have this month of free fares. I talked with, you know, a student who has a transit pass for school. I talked with a couple tourists who were like, ooh, it's cool that there's, you know, free fares this month. We're going to use this instead of, you know, Uber or something.
Yeah.
Well, I super appreciate it. It definitely makes my life easier traveling around. I don't have to worry about holding cash or, you know, getting a ticket or having money with me.
Do you think this is a good idea for other cities, like a free month? Like, do you think it would be effective to get people, like, in your town or, like, other places, like, to, like, kind of get them in and then maybe they would continue riding? Do you think it's a good idea?
100%. I don't see why I wouldn't. I think you'd grab maybe a few more people that wouldn't have considered it before, especially on hot days like today.
One of the people I talked to on the bus, who was pretty articulate, actually gave me her phone number. So I gave her a call. Her name was Linda, and asked her, could you talk to me about some of the stuff that you shared on the bus about RTD?
They don't care about the ridership. They take our shelters. They take our benches. I'm 75. Where do I sit? RTD, again, like the city, they need to go back to think about the people who don't have cars and who don't own homes and who walk the, you know, areas.
The moving around of bus stops and the consolidation like that, the removing of benches and shelters is just doesn't really seem like kind of they have her in mind, seniors who are riding the bus in mind. So there's some really interesting points there of what would change. But
what could be improved.
But yeah, talk to a lot of people for sure. It was a really interesting experience.
But overall, it sounds like you got pretty positive feedback from folks who were riding the bus with you.
Pretty positive. I would ask them how they've been liking the free fare month. And then, you know, was there anything you change about RTD? And, you know, sometimes they had something and sometimes they had to kind of sit and think about it for a bit. But of course, I was talking to people who ride RTD, right?
Right.
They're already there.
That's the crux of this is they're already on the bus.
Exactly.
Hi, CityCast Denver. This is Molly from Golden Triangle. And I was really excited about the RTD August promotion of free rides everywhere. I told everyone about it that I knew. I personally don't have a car, so this was something really exciting. But I didn't end up taking advantage of it. The issue is that the bus stops nearest me are still pretty far away, and they're not places that I want to walk to or hang around in just because they feel a little bit unsafe. But I still think Public transportation is where we need to be, so I'm happy RTD tried. Thanks. Bye.
Lizzie Goldsmith, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Lizzie checked with RTD about the hard data, because we really still want to know if free fares lured drivers out of their cars. Apparently, those numbers won't be available until November.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jack Armstrong. Stay tuned for commentary from Jim Hightower, and then Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longobetter. But first, the BBC News headlines.